Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
And we're back, episode 14, season 2, Be the Right Club Today podcast. Hal, how's it going?
Good, Jamie.
Good, good. Glad to have you join me today. We got a great interview lined up today. We got Mark Blackburn joining us. He is very, very popular right now in the coaching world.
I think he is. Yeah, I think he is. And I think he's earned the right to be that.
Yeah.
I'm excited to listen to what he's got to say, and I feel like everybody ought to be ears wide open, minds wide open, because I think he's a pretty sharp guy.
Yep, he's working with a whole range of tour players right now, and his stock's obviously rising quickly with the success Homa's had in the last couple of years. You like Max Homa's swing, don't you?
I love Max Homa's swing, yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Is it you feel like you can relate to it a little bit?
I do. I think for some reason I just feel like our left side work similar in a way, mm-hmm. and I'm anxious to talk to him about it.
Yeah, well, we're really looking forward to bringing that interview to you. You can also check us out on YouTube. The interview will be on there. It might be a good one to tune into. I'm sure there'll be some visual stuff that Mark will talk about with the swing. You can see the interview right after the break. This episode is brought to you by Holderness & Bourne. There is a few aspects that really make a shirt great, and we think Holderness & Bourne ticks all the boxes. Their commitment to using premium materials in all their shirts and how they tailor those materials to produce a really comfortable fit and a really great look. They combine that also with a fantastic collar. They use sewn-in collar stays, and the way they cut the collar, it looks really sharp. Combine all that with really great options, solid stripes, patterns, colours for everyone. Head over to hbgolf.com and check them out. For 15% off, use the code HSutton15. And again, that's HSutton15 for 15% off. Okay, we are back. Episode 14. Mark Blackburn is with us. Mark, thanks for taking the time to join us here in the podcast today. Most of our listeners will be well aware of you and your background, but for those that may not be, can you introduce yourself a little to our listeners?
Sure, yeah, great to be with you guys. My name's Mark Blackburn. I'm a golf coach based in Birmingham, Alabama, at Greystone. That's where our academy is, and I spend a lot of time teaching everybody from beginners all the way to some of the best players on the world on the PGA Tour. So I'm pretty much a full-time teacher. I don't just teach the best players in the world. I also teach juniors, you know, beginners, everyone who wants to play golf. I kind of our team as well. It's not just me. There's five other coaches. So we work with a whole bunch of kids, different players. So we've got lots of great coaches, ladies and guys. We probably specialize in junior development and competitive players, and also obviously tour guys and girls. But we also teach a lot of our members. We have like 800 members here. So we teach them on a daily basis, run all our programming through them as well. And then the general public, we're very fortunate here at Greystone. Anybody from anywhere around the world can come in and take lessons, and they do. So, yeah, that's kind of what we do. If you like golf and you like golf instruction and golf coaching and trying to play the game, we're big on playing the game and shooting a score, then that's kind of what we do. So I'm definitely a complete golf junkie nerd, as all my clients will tell you.
So, Mark, how'd you get started doing this? I'm sure you were a golfer at a young age, had dreams of your own, and how did you segue into coaching from playing?
So it's a great question. Well, I think, like anybody who sort of plays golf, I grew up in England. I grew up just south of London in Surrey at a golf course called Betchworth Park, which was designed by Harry Colt, the same guy that did Walton Heath and Wentworth and a lot of great golf courses. I kind of came to golf late. I played lots of other sports. I got sick of getting hurt playing rugby. It was probably my main sport. I used to go play golf with my dad and my grandfather a little bit, but it wasn't until I was about 14 I got serious. And then I kind of just immersed myself and played golf, but was a late bloomer. So in the UK, unlike kind of the US, in the UK, if you're not great at something, they're quite short-sighted. And if you spent any time in England, they tend to not live towards the optimism side of the curve. They're more in the pessimism. So if you're not great at something, they don't necessarily invest in you. So I kind of had to invest in myself and ended up securing a golf scholarship. I went to school in Mobile. I was recruited to a school in South Alabama, Saraland, the University of Mobile. And then I ended up subsequently getting recruited to Southern Mississippi, and I graduated from there. Had my eyes set on playing for a career. Was inconsistent at best, and then I got injured and then kind of didn't really have a sponsorship. So I needed to fund my sort of abilities to play, and that's when I fell into teaching. And I'd always been fascinated with the golf swing, kind of just by nature. And what ended up happening was just me becoming besotted with it and would spend a lot of time going out for a, you know, 20-minute lesson, and I'd come back 2.5 hours later. But I really enjoyed it. And then I just started a sort of quest to learn as much as I could to try and fix my golf game. And then that transitioned into helping other people, and just I had an affinity for it, but always looked at it with the lens of trying to play the game. And me as a player, how could you shoot lower scores? And I'm big on very shot centric, like what are the shots that you need to do to play golf as opposed to just a golf swing? And I kind of think that transitioned into then helping players from that I'd played mini tours with who had then got onto the PGA Tour and were struggling. And so I kind of fast tracked that sort of journey of getting a player just because of the relationships I had having tried to play golf. And I was the guy on the range with all the trinkets, always tinkering, looking at different things. And people would always be like, oh, that guy's always practicing. He's always working on his game. May not have always, played great, but kind of was a studier of understanding it. And that's kind of how it happened. And then my degree at school was exercise science and coaching. And then I kind of morphed that with background in the golf machine, Mac O'Grady, and then kind of brought that together with the sort of functional movement. Greg Rose and Dave Phillips at TPI, especially Greg, you know, really helped me in the sort of early 2000s. And then all of a sudden it was very much developing a golf swing and a motion around each player's individual physicality and how they move. And that's kind of what I've done for the last sort of, you know, near as damn it 20 years. And that's probably why if you look at all the players we work with, there isn't any two that swing the same, and their swings are all built around their own unique, you know, movement patterns. And then from there, we develop them to what sort of golf shot do they want to hit and play in the game. So that's a very quick, condensed synopsis of how I ended up, you know, peddling golf lessons to everybody and anybody.
So Dave Phillips is a good friend. Tell Dave I said hi.
I'll do it.
But have you ever met Mac O'Grady?
Oh, yeah. I've spent a lot of time with Mac.
He's spent a lot of time with him.
Interesting character. Extremely clever, talented, figured a lot of things out. I'll be the first to tell you I left Mac's sort of Morad project on my own accord. Most people get evicted, let's say. But I left. But he was great. Communication wasn't necessarily Mac's best skill set, but he was very, very clever. When technology wasn't around to measure like it is now, and I would say the one thing now is I kind of measure everything so I can get a really good understanding of what the golfer does, their tendencies on the front end, so that then I know when I'm asking them to do something, here's how you move. But Mac figured a lot of things out without any technology. So full kudos to him. And if you look at the tree of coaches, like West Coast, East Coast, there's a lot of people that have come out of that golf machine, Mac O'Grady sort of school. And Mac did a lot of really good things. Stack and Tilt was an abbreviation of Mac's information. So I would say he was very influential in some of my like looking at golf swings initially, but very much the model method I don't necessarily agree with. But those things, I learned a lot from him.
So, you know, I played quite a bit with Mac. And, you know, he had a great golf swing. There's no doubt about it. His tempo was really good. But this is a perfect example. He couldn't translate great golf swing into great player, basically. And he did a lot of really good things, like you're talking about. But he couldn't really put it all together. And – So I think this is a good time for me to ask you the question. There are good players and there are good swingers, and sometimes they're the same guy.
Yep.
But not all the time.
Correct.
Would you agree with that?
100%. I would tell you that week in, week out, the guys that and girls on both tours or all the tours that play well aren't always the players that look the best, you know, aesthetically from a long way off, but they're the folks that know how to use what they've got. So back on my whole point of being score-centric and shot-centric, when you're swing-centric and everything is about a golf swing, you spend all your time immersed in your swing, you never learn how to use it. Whereas the best players have idiosyncrasies, but sometimes those are superpowers that make them able not to hit it left or not hit it right, allow them to do certain things, and they embrace that, which is what I try and get all my players to do, so that they learn how to use what they've got. Sometimes not being able to hit shots is a blessing because it means you don't ever consider it. And sometimes it allows you certain idiosyncrasies. You can't miss it in a certain spot. So now you can be more aggressive. You can do certain things. So I 100% agree with you that the best players are the people who own what they've got and they understand their game and their tendencies. And I call your golf swing, I didn't come up with it. Dr. Will Wu did, a friend of mine, a motor learning guy. But a golf swing's like a recipe, and a recipe has ingredients. My job as the coach is to make you understand your ingredients and make sure you stick with your ingredients and you don't start tinkering and bring other ones in, because a lot of times now that's going to make the recipe not work and you're going to struggle.
So I've got to jump in with that, what you just said. I couldn't agree with you more than that, but as a player, we're always trying to get better, and our weakest moments are when we don't play particularly well. And if we're playing with someone that says, hey, you might ought to think about doing this, that player is always chasing the best version of themselves, and they don't know what that is. For everybody out there listening, I say this is a real vulnerable time in a player's life. When you're not quite playing as well, you're willing to throw in some more ingredients into it, which really complicate things, don't they, Mark?
Yeah, 100%. I think, look, when you're struggling, you're willing, you know, golf is a hard game. Like, guys like you, you know, make golf look easy. The best players in the world. But the reality is it's a hard game and it's a knife edge, right? You can be bulletproof one day and suicidal the next. And that's the world. As a coach, we kind of live in that world. But when someone struggles, I tell people there's two times that you can have intervention with a player as a coach. It's when they're struggling or when they're injured. So your point, people are vulnerable when they're not playing very well. They got rabbit ears and all of a sudden something sounds good. And remember, people take the easy way out most of the time. Instead of like, golf is difficult, I got to go through this. You know, as long as you're trending, you're going to have ups and downs. It always happens. A lot of times people hit the easy button and now all of a sudden they bring other ingredients in and now they lose the clarity that they have of their concepts, and then it gets really hard. So I would say, as a coach, I'm overly pragmatic. I'm not one of the new age Zen type coaches. Like, I'll motivate players and nurture, but I'm also very much, okay, here's the problem. Here's the shot you want to hit. Here's how you have to go about doing it based on what you do. If you deviate from that, all you're doing is delaying the, if you like, time it takes to be successful. There's no easy way to do it. Sometimes a player will come and they've got a few things that are messed up and it's an easy fix. But that's very rare. And over time, obviously, as a coach, when you have more experience, you get better at that. And your job is to be as uninvasive as possible. But there's no shortcuts. Unfortunately, getting better is hard. And you could do it on a range, as I think you'd be able to attest. But then transferring that to the course and actually performing, that's a very different animal. So you've learned a skill, but now you've got to go develop it on the golf course and hit golf shots and what works and what doesn't. It's not necessarily easy. And I think the job of a coach is to always be a sounding board and to be a voice of reason and calm in the chaos of playing golf and be like, hey, look, we're progressing. Just because this is hard, you've got to dig in now and work through this. Remember, frustration is part of learning. It's an essential part. towards mastery. And I think that's the job. And that's a lot more of what I would say coaching is what you do on the PGA Tour. When they come to see me, there's a lot more hands-on teaching, but coaching is navigating those difficult moments and trying to give the players confidence and help, you know, empathize with them and partner through them when they're struggling with those things. But players are dangerous, especially good players, because they can do something quite quickly and they are willing to try a lot of different things. So my job is to be, no, look, we're on a journey. Here's what you got to do. You need to stick to it. And that's why I think great coaches have no problem. My job's not to be friends with the player. It's to direct the player and basically nurture them to get better. Sometimes that makes me quite unpopular, but as a good coach, you have to be willing to have hard conversations and say things that, you know, you if you're not willing to get fired by doing the right thing, you're never going to be a great coach.
Well, honestly, you can't coach someone to be better if you're going to accept and be their friend. If you're going to accept what they got and be their friend, because they're all wanting to hear, yes, you look great. And, you know, that's what – I mean, I was there. I've been there. I know what that's like. You know, I needed security. I needed whoever was working with me at the time to say, man, you look awesome, or whatever, even if I didn't. But that's a big part of playing golf is yeah. believing that you can hit the shot that you're about to try to hit.
100%. And
so, you know, you walk a fine line as a coach. You know, you want to help them get better, but at the same time, you don't want to status quo it, basically. I mean, we got to keep moving forward in this journey.
Yeah. And you, I think the great thing now is it can be good and bad because we're highly accountable as coaches, but statistics have been really useful. Strokes gained, these measurements, because you can actually see where somebody's performing and where they're gaining or losing strokes. And for me, my emphasis is more on short game up to, you know, full swing. Putting isn't probably my forte. So I, a lot of times, will defer that out to people like Phil Kenyon or Stephen Sweeney, or, you know, John Graham, guys that are putting experts. But I'm accountable and I get that translated into statistics. So I actually think that's good. But yeah, you're trying to always pump the player up to a certain degree, but you're also, as a, my job is to make sure that I'm doing my job, and now you can't hide anymore. You used to be able to hide behind pretty looking golf swings. And if the player didn't play well, it was all mental. But the truth of the matter is now you can really see the sort of different areas of their game where they struggle. And so I got to do a pretty good job or I'm going to be – it's right there, very, very gleamingly obvious that the information or the mechanism that they're using to try and do the job isn't very good. And I will say that tour players will do what you ask them to do. If they believe in the concept, it's very compelling and you deliver it in the right way – you better make sure it's the right thing because they'll do it and they'll probably overdo it to a fault, but they're going to do the work. So you get exposed quickly if you're giving bad information.
I love what you just said. They'll probably overdo it. And that's the mark of a champion right there, because as they begin to get better and they notice that they're getting better, it's just human nature to say more of this will make me even better. And yeah. I try to tell everybody that comes in here, if this is perfect, and you're down here, and I give you the ingredients that start moving you closer to perfect. As a player, you're going to think, man, if I just keep doing this more, I'll get better and better. And the next thing you know, you're as far away up here as you were down here. So, I mean, you understand that as well as anybody, I'm sure. So,
yeah, I think one of the things that we now know, right, that the way the brain learns, the brain doesn't do well with the same thing over and over. So to your point, like overdosing is what everybody does. If right. if one is good, I need to do 500. That's the tour player mindset.
Right.
Now, the truth of the matter is when we're learning, if you use like variability intentionally, so if this is ideal, we're going to live at really overdone and we're going to do in a positive way and we're going to leave work on down here badly, so you can differentiate between bad and good, your brain will actually start to learn a lot more effectively versus just doing the same thing over and over. So I would say we can now reduce the amount of overdosing because you intentionally use that variability in practice. But as a coach, you have to remember also that they're going to, if one drill is really good that they like and they have a positive outcome, they'll stick with that. And the ones that they don't like, which are actually really beneficial, they won't do as many of. And so again, it's trying to always juggle the sort of plan for them. But you really walk that fine line as a coach of good players, they will overdose stuff. And so you got to try and use these mechanisms like variability to ensure that that doesn't happen. But invariably, it always does. So, and that's the hard part. A good golf, I think you'd probably agree with this, is when people change coaches or they move to a different direction, they were over here, their new information is way over here, and they probably have this sweet spot where they fall in the middle for a period of time and they play incredible. But when they actually get all the way over here, now they got a problem, and then they'll start jumping around again. So the job of the coach is to how often can you keep them sort of in the lane, so to speak, and to manage it. Now, that's where not over practicing, but practicing just enough to keep you ready. And when you get to a golf tournament, you're trying to do enough to learn the golf course every week, but to have your energy for the back nine on Sunday so that you're not completely spent. Because how you would know this better than anybody is that golf tournaments are mentally very taxing. If you're in contention and you're playing well, it's way more of a mental task than it is a physical task, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
So Mark, a tour pro give you a call, need some help. What's your process for starting off with that player?
So the players I coach, they'll obviously first come to me, they'll ask some questions. So the first thing I now do is I'll look at their stats. So I'll look at it, where are they deficient? Most people, even though these stats are right there, most players are very subjective, not objective. So I got to look at, okay, does my skill set, number one, match where their deficiency is? If it's a ball hitting, short game, pitching, wedge work, I'll be like, okay, I've got the skill set which would marry to this. If it's someone that hits, 70% of their greens, has pretty good strokes gained around the green, but they're negative, they're 160th in putting, I'll be like, listen, I'm the wrong person for you. Okay, so, but assuming that they're pretty good at the right areas for my skill set, the first thing I'd be like, okay, come see me here at Birmingham. I don't like doing stuff on the PGA Tour first time just because it's just a bad learning environment. When there's no tournament, players tend to be much more relaxed, a lot more receptive to new information. As a former player, if you're at a tournament, usually if you're wanting information at a tournament that's new, it's DEFCON 3, panic stations, and you need a quick fix, which is not a learning, it's coaching suicide. Yeah. It's difficult because you can give them something, it's pixie dust, it might work, but it's not a long-term fix, right? So essentially they'll come to me. First thing we do is a physical evaluation, like a movement screen and a power testing. So let's look at how you move, what your, mobility and stability is like from your functional perspective. Then let's take a look at, your power. Where do you develop your power? Is it your upper body, your lower body? Is it your core? We test that. Then we'll do some 3D motion capture. Then we'll do some ground force stuff. We'll take some video. Essentially, I've got these big 8x4 whiteboards. And I'll write up, the player's name. I'll put their movement screen on the far left side over here. And then every golf swing kind of has setup, backswing, downswing, transition, downswing, and delivery. And then we kind of look at each area in their golf swing. What are the ingredients? What are the pieces that they have? And then what's the shot that they want to hit? I always start with, you tell me what shot you want to hit, and then we'll work back from there. So what's the shot shape? And then what's the trajectory? From there, now we'll start with the end in mind and work backwards so that everything, all the ingredients, some that they're bringing based on their own, unique body sort of motion versus what do they need to do? Is, what they do helping their outcome or hindering it? Where is some of the issues? And I would say I spend a lot of time in setup and the backswing. because the golf club is moving the slowest when it's stationary, easiest, least invasive, in my opinion. And then in the backswing, you can do something about it. But the downswing is so quick that if you're trying to manipulate it, a tour player can do it short term. It won't work long term. I'm trying to stack the deck in my favor or the player's favor so that they can have the outcome they want via setup, backswing, just downswing, blackout. Does the ball come out with the right shape and the right shot without them having to manipulate? If it does, awesome. Then once they've got the pattern down, now it becomes, all right, let's get into performance work. Let's start to try and see how you use it. Let's stress the player, take them on the golf course. I want to see what your tendencies are. And a lot of times on the evaluation on the front end, I'll take them on the course because I want to see where their shots are, their nemesis, certain wind directions. Are they a problem? And then once we've got all that, I want to then try and get them to understand how to use what they've got and then what are the things and the mechanisms we need to do. But that's pretty much how it goes. Every player that comes in, if they're going to come see me, it's a day or 2 days, and that's kind of how it goes. But the front end is a lot of diagnostic work. And we use the same process with, like, juniors, with everybody who wants to come who's a competitive player. Now, in our regular monthly, weekly coaching sessions for our juniors, a lot of that stuff is already incorporated very uninvasively. So they're kind of, because they're group sessions, people, the kids learn better in a group. So we're doing it. But the sort of framework and the protocols are the same. And the great thing is, because they're not based on a method, but more of a, this is kind of the process, any coach can input what they believe the player should do. So it becomes very scalable so that every coach that's here can do the same thing. And that's why you then get the consistency. And you get, you know, a lot of improvements because it's a very bulletproof way to coach because it's not a method. It's based on the individual and what their outcome, desired outcome is, and then how they're going to go about it. Because I don't want to ask someone to do something they physically can't. If I know they can physically do it and it matches the outcome they want, I feel like myself and our team, we're pretty competent at the teaching and the coaching part. That becomes pretty easy. That's the artistic part of, like, how do I create a vernacular with each player? And I communicate very differently with players. I'm the first to tell you, I've been to church with some players and I've been to nightclubs with others. Whatever it takes to kind of communicate with them and build that rapport so that there's a trust. And that's kind of, that's what we do. And obviously when you're not stylistically driven and you're very much more into the individual. And like, I like golf swings, pretty golf swings to me are real good from hip high on the downswing to hip high through the hip. And the ball comes out, makes a good noise and goes the same direction that the player wants. That's good golf to me. I don't get caught up in whether it's looks like this or it looks like this. They can all work if you understand the different ingredients that go with it. So some strong grips are great for some people. They're terrible for others. Weak grips are good for some people. They're terrible for others. Some people can be really open. Some people, that's terrible. Like, there's everybody from all the way over here to all the way over here in the Hall of Fame. It can all work. You just need to know if it's going to work for you based on how you move and what the shots you want to hit. And that's honestly, that is my elevator pitch on kind of how we coach, because it's very agnostic. You're not limited by anything because there's always a solution. You just have to, it's a critical thinking process of what's going to be the easiest, least invasive for this player for the outcome that they want.
So, Mark, I've got to throw in, you got to give me a second here. I got several things I want to say. Let's see if we can prioritize these things so you can actually answer them. 1978, I started going to see nationally acclaimed teachers. Coaches. At the time, no one would have called themselves a coach. You've called yourself a coach almost exclusively rather than a teacher. What so far, am I correct?
Yeah.
Okay. No one that I've ever talked to knows as much as you know across the whole spectrum. I'm just being honest with you. You have captivated me with everything that you're saying right now. with the experience that I have. So it makes me want to ask you a question, because I could 100% believe that the setup and the backswing dictate what's going to happen when the club is moving its fastest. Yep. So, and you said that just a minute ago. So I'm going to take that a little bit further. Do you think that the lead arm has more to do or less to do with the backswing?
That's a great question. Okay, so you're not going to like this answer, but it's a good one for a coach because it stops you getting put in a box. It depends, okay? So for some players, the lead arm relationship in the backswing is going to be really important. And then for other players, I might argue that the trail arm is really important. So it depends. So one thing I would tell you is trail arm structure is really useful for controlling where the club goes in the backswing and kind of the structure of your backswing. But the lead arm is really important for the depth in the backswing and the planing, right? So they both have an important part of, and they have their own roles. Now here's where we have a pickle. Let's say this, I'm a person that's lead arm is my thing. And I do a shoulder flexion test and my arm doesn't go any higher than this. That's going to be real different from the guy or girl that can get their arm past 180 degrees, which is what the average tour player is, right? If you're by a wall, you can go behind it. But a lot of players that come in here, Max Homer being one of them, he can't get his arm basically above his nose, okay? So his backswing, where this lead arm is and the dominance of this is going to be very different to someone who can do this. So the hard part is it depends. For some people, this could be everything. For other people, it may not be. This might be everything. It, again, just depends. This arm can be important, but now if you have no external rotation, you can't move it, that's going to be very different to the guy or girl that can go beyond their spine. So again, there depends. I know that's a bit generic, but I'm just giving you, like, again, your physicality is going to somewhat dictate how significant each piece is. But yes, absolutely, for some people this could be everything, but for other people maybe this one.
So you answered that exactly the way I thought you were going to answer that, to be honest with you, because it's a two-sided game.
Yeah.
And people want to simplify everything and make it as simple as they can, so they want to make it as one-sided as they can. Yeah. And the truth of the matter is, you know, when I was playing my best, in the first foot of my takeaway, I knew I was headed down the right path or I wasn't headed down the right path. Have you ever heard a player tell you that?
100%. Yep. Totally.
So, and I try to tell people, look, if we're moving everything together and both sides are working the way they're supposed to work, you're going to know it quickly.
Yep.
If one's going the wrong direction, you're going to also know that quickly.
100%.
When I was really on fire, when I was playing my best, I wish I had three right sides to hit it with. But if I had three right sides and I was in the wrong position, it's just that much worse, basically.
Correct. Yeah, 100%. It's like loading the club up so that you can just deliver it and let it go. And the best players, their sequencing is very similar because they put the club in a position at the top of the backswing where they can just let it go. And that's the hard part, is when you don't know what's coming out the barrel as a tour player, that's a big problem, because you're basically, nothing's guaranteed, but you're hedging your bet pretty much 99.9% of the time that I'm going to play down the left cut line if I fade it and that ball's working back to the middle of the fairway. I know that ball ain't going left in the left rough or in the left out bounds. So you need to know that what you've put in, it's going to come out with what you want. And that's the hard part, but that's what great players do. That's why it's not sexy, but grip, posture, alignment, tilts, where you orientate, ball location, all of those things kind of start the dominoes before you ever do anything. And then how you move in the backswing, you know, where your body orientates, if you drift off the ball, if you stay more centered, all those things are going to influence where that club is orbiting in the downswing.
So aged players, certainly I'd be one of those, you know, trail shoulder rotation, internal, external rotation.
Yep.
You probably see a lot of the older guys that can't get this arm going this way.
100%.
I'm one of those guys, basically. Yep. We went this way on our downswing.
Yep.
So how do you coach a guy like that? Coach me for a second.
So if you're limited with this,
right,
there are some teach arounds. So you would probably argue as guys age, there's probably a trend for people's grips to weaken so that they have the ability to not get the faces closed and their body doesn't rotate and clear out the way as much. Because if they have a strong grip and then they can't clear out the way and get the club sort of shallowing, now they're going to have a big left miss. So you start to see a lot of guys, as they get older, they kind of get more weaker. They also then may develop from going from a stronger face on the halfway back to now the face playing more open because now they've got a bit more of a chance with this. A lot of guys, as they age, their lower body atrophies, so they get no arse at all disease. They start extending and they use their pelvis and their lower body to shallow the club to offset their inability to kind of do their trail arm. So I always say if you struggle with this and you probably don't do very well with this, I'd try and get a player to use a little bit more forearm rotation, get the face a little more open here. Your trail arm, if you get it a little bit more supinated, palm up, you kind of can create a little bit more of that motion. Because if your trail arm is more this way, internal, pronated, you're restricting this. So I'm always a bit more of a, someone's restricted, let's get you a bit more open face, let's get you a bit more here, give you a bit more forearm rotation to try and help you square the face up. Is it a bit more timing based? Sure is. But you got to hedge it in what's going to work for you, because there's no point in me saying, okay, I need you to really rotate and get open, because you've lost that range of motion. So that's kind of what I would say is one of the commonalities amongst folks that are losing range of motion. You have to create it somewhere else. Joints can take on other characteristics. You just need to be careful of injury, because obviously you put a joint or a, you know, arm, leg, hit in a position it's not really comfortable in, over long-term sort of overuse, you can put yourself in a pickle. But most of the time, guys that are playing competitively on the Champions Tour, they're working out just like the guys on the PGA Tour. So kind of offsets it. But there's always a workaround. It's just you have to get outside your head a little bit, and it may go against convention. And again, if it works pretty good from halfway down to halfway through, and the club's doing this, and this is doing this, it's a pretty good matchup.
Well, I got to tell you something, Mark. I have talked to a lot of people about the golf swing. I am super impressed with you. I cannot. You got the answer just like that. I totally agree. Forearm rotation is what Hal Sutton has to have. I've got an artificial left knee, an artificial left hip, and I can't rotate as hard as I used to. I can't keep the club face closed as long. I can't. I have none of this. I've always liked Max Homa's swing. He's limited when it comes to this, you've said.
Yep.
You've done a great job. I love Max Homa's golf swing.
Yeah, maybe
it's because I can relate to it a little bit, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's one thing that the greatest players in the world who've played over time and won majors and great players, you all have an eye to see things in other players that are commonalities with you and the way things would work for you, which is why I ended up working with Justin Rose, because he played with Max Homa 2 years ago. He liked his golf swing and what his golf ball did. Now, ironically, they have similar movement tendencies. So it makes sense that completely internally, Rosie has an affiliation with that. So it's the same, right? Like you see things in players that you like because it probably has some sort of resemblance to what you feel or see. But there's always a way to do it. There are, I'm confident, right? I'll go on the record. All the stuff we talk about now about using your body rotation and letting the club fall and shallow and you square it up with your body, I guarantee you there's loads of people in the Hall of Fame who completely felt the complete opposite. So you can do it any different way. You just have to be open-minded enough as a coach to guide the person to basically go, look, this could work for you. There's no guarantees, but my job from a coaching perspective is to never put someone in a box to go, you can't do that. I'm always trying to give the student options, like I've told you. There's never just one answer. That's easy. You've got to give them options, and then they use the best case scenario. But I think you can play great with good hands. I'd argue Tiger Woods got the best hands I've ever seen live in person from what he was able to do. So you can do it. It's just a question of, are you comfortable in that? So there's lots of different ways, but just saying you can only do it one way is kind of ignorant. And as a coach, you're doing every player that you're trying to help a disservice.
Well, I got to tell you what, I'm so impressed with you. I'm not playing very much. I want to go practice so I can come down and see you and get your opinion on what you think of Hal Sutton's golf swing.
Love to have you anytime. But yeah, I mean, I love talking the golf swing. Like it's fun just because there's so many different options. That's what makes it so great. And the one thing I would say as traveling over the last 20 plus years on the PGA Tour and being around the best players, you are in the ultimate sort of environment to study and watch and see what people do. And there's so many different ways to get it done. That as a coach, the stuff that's kind of goofy, that looks weird, that works really well, that's the stuff that intrigues me. And a lot of times, those are the things that I use with my club golfers. And people are like, oh, well, that pattern, I've seen that work. Let's see if your movement will facilitate it. If it does, okay, well, you should maybe try that. So I'm the first to tell you, I don't mind changing a grip. I don't mind changing some setup stuff invasively for the club golfer because they can't mess up because they're already bad, just to get them good outcomes. But I learned all that from the PGA Tour and then probably 10 years before that, teaching a lot of really bad golfers in rural Alabama where my accent and theirs didn't jive, and I'm trying to figure out how to fix people, right? There's no substitute for fixing bad golfers. It really helps, especially if you're at Augusta on the old range and somebody's slicing it down Magnolia Lane and you got to fix a slice. Doesn't matter who it is. It's the same as fixing slices on Sand Mountain in North Alabama, right? So those experiences help, but teaching golfers the tour allows you to see what can work, and there are so many different ways to get it done. You just got to figure out if you can do it that way physically. And if you can, do you then have the time and the commitment to work at it hard enough to get it done? Because that's the other part. People come see me and think, oh, you help these great players. You can fix me. Well, those great players put hours and hours in, and Joe Blow, the CEO, who's got more money and flies his jet in here, he's also doing multi-million dollar deals and thinks that my pixie dust is going to fix him in a day. Well, it's not the day, it's the work he's going to do outside of it.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's a lot. That's great.
That's a lot of information. I hope everybody's paying attention because you just poured it on, Mark.
any other questions you got while we're here? We're going.
No, I tell you, my soft little brain can't handle any more, to be honest with you. But I tell you, I've always been passionate about golf. I love golf, and I totally agree that there's a lot of ways to get it done. You know, back in my era, you know, you could be 300 yards away from a golfer, and you could pick out Nicklaus, you could pick out Trevino, Raymond Floyd, Lanny Watkins. You pick out all those guys 300 yards away. You didn't have to be there to read their name on the bag. You could tell from the way their golf swing was moving. A lot less so today, is that true? I mean, yeah. A lot of guys swing very similar to one another. And we attribute that to the knowledge that we have now based on the technology, that the things we have available to us now has developed people like you because you can fine-tune all of this. And I mean, I'm just excited talking to you. I mean, you can tell I've enjoyed this conversation. This is not work for me. This is fun. Talking golf, talking shop. So thank you so much for coming on, sharing what you know. I hope all of our guys, y'all need to go see Mark. because he knows what he's talking about.
Well, no, and it's great to talk golf, and obviously, like I told you in our text ahead of time, obviously, it's always cool to talk to great players and players that you've respected and watched and like the things that you've accomplished in the game, and then to have a conversation and people like you be interested to hear from, you know, lowly coaches like me is always fun. And I think that we all kind of see the same things. The lens that you see through things through and the experiences are very different to mine, but it's like we have a lot of commonalities in what we do. And I think good coaches who've been around the game a long time and coach tour players, we see a lot of things eye to eye, and especially when you guys are not competing, and once you're away from the game and you've had time to reflect, you're hugely impactful to people because your experience and your wisdom is great. And it's like all of a sudden now we're on the same page. Whereas I think when you're playing, coaches and teachers and players don't always see eye to eye. But if you've been around a long time as a coach and then you've played for a long time, you have a lot of commonalities after the fact. And I think that's important because we can help more golfers. There's more golfers than I can ever coach or you can coach, but together this information can help people get better. And there's lots of great coaches out there, but like taking it from you and your experience, look, different ways to do it. There's not one way to do it, but playing the game and hitting golf shots, that's where it's at. So getting out on the golf course and experimenting is a huge thing.
Wow. Thank you so much, Mark.
You got it.
We'll get you on again. Hey, another person. I really want to get Max home on here. Help me do that.
You got it. I can make that happen, I'm pretty sure.
All right.
Thanks, Mark.
Tell him I really respect his game. I love what he's doing.
You got it. I will let him know when I see him at Royal Liverpool. I will.
There you go. Sure. All right.
Get you on there.
Thanks, Mark. Enjoy Thank the you, summer. Mark. Yeah, enjoy
see
the
See you guys. Bye.
All right.
Welcome back, everyone. Hal, that was an amazing conversation by Mark.
Oh, my goodness. I've talked to a lot of people in my lifetime about golf. This is one of the sharpest guys I've ever talked to. I hope y'all are listening to me. You know, he was on the spot with everything he was talking about. You could tell that this guy is into what he's doing. And anybody that wants to work on their golf game, if you're really serious about it, don't you want somebody that is studying it constantly, trying to get better and open-minded? I think this guy exhibited every bit of that today. And, you know, if I were fixing to go back and try to get better at golf, I'd go see him because, in fact, I'm going to go as soon as I get my golf game. I haven't been playing very much, but I'm going to Alabama to see him. That's how much I believe in what he was talking about. So, I mean, I definitely believe that he talked about hip high to hip high. That is the golf swing. We worry about all the other stuff. And he talked about he was big on takeaway and slow motion. I mean, in the backswing, because it sets it up when you go fast. I don't think you can feel the downswing. Most of the time, you can't feel the nuances of the downswing. It just happens. Mm-hmm. So he explains all of that. I hope y'all heard him. If you didn't, listen to it again.
Yeah, I loved his approach, physically screening players to see how their body works and what ingredients he can add to their swing based on how they move. I think that's awesome.
Well, I mean, we've had a lot of great people on this podcast, but Mark just went to the top of the list as far as I'm concerned. Anyway. Hope you enjoyed it.
See you next time.